Thanks for continuing with us on Nia Gawani. My name is Ibrahim Sani. I'm joined by Nabila Khalidah, taking over our colleagues Dina Rosman as well as Haris Ashraf Hasnan. I want to look at some of the developments that is currently happening on the local bars. But before that, we have learned that Tan Sri Khalid Ibrahim, the former Menteri Besar of Selangor, has passed away last night. But of course, the issue at hand is not just about his role in the public service, but his capacity to lead Golden Hope at that time during the Dawn Raid. His efforts did think about the idea of how the Dawn Raid took precedent over the item that is in the textbooks of many business schools in the country. The Dawn Raid is something that many of us have read, studied and learned extensively. We have also used it as the key moment of how we need to think about corporate takeover and ownership. These are the items that will profoundly live in many of the Malaysian, corporate Malaysia moving forward. And of course, the Dawn Raid, even though it took place more than, well, close to 40 years ago, still is fresh in our memories. We would wish the surviving members of Tan Sri Khalid all the best. I have known him personally. I have interviewed him on air multiple times, and he is of outstanding character. The visual that you see here right now is the events that is taking place at the solemnization of the solat jenazah of Tan Sri Khalid. He will be interred after Zohor prayers, as what we have been informed. And of course, we're looking at a lot of well-wishers, worshippers, as well as family members and friends, as well as students of the business industry in Malaysia to visit his last remains at the mosque. We now move on to the business news of the country. It's a Monday morning, 1st of August, new month. 58% of the year has lapsed, so now we want to understand a little bit better about some of the developments that's currently happening in the country. Digital payments are going beyond borders. Many countries are moving faster to leverage from 5G, including Malaysia. Digital landscape is making a paradigm shift in the financial markets. And according to the latest insights from EIU, or Economies Intelligence Unit, the digital boom has given rise to embedded finance, the integration of financial services with non-financial offerings. And this has spurred the development of breaking as a service platforms, which allow non-financial companies to offer financial services through linkages with banks. Now, all of these developments have made digital payments synonymous with mobile payments, with the volume of online payments growing rapidly over the past few years, with a massive surge in the years between 2020 to 2021. Over a five-year forecast period between 22 to 26, growth moderate will be experiencing somewhat, and mainly this is owing to a strong base because of the growth that we've seen in 2020 and 2021. So joining us this morning, Shan Syed of IQI Holdings, Chief Economist.
Hi, Sean.
All right. Yes,
so my question, my question here is: this year, 2022, has brought shock to the global economy, right? So, for instance, the war in Ukraine, and we expect this to disrupt cross-border payment flows over our forecast period. So, following the digital disruption in local retail payments, customers are increasingly demanding for a similar revolution in cross-border payments that's driven by real-time settlements and also application programming interfaces as well as open banking. So, basically, a system that allows users to securely share financial data with third-party applications. And currently, most cross-border payments still travel through the old-fashioned. So, Sean, what are the key challenges in the cross-border payment in the present system, and what are the solutions?
At present, I foresee four challenges to the existing cross-border payment. One is the high cost. As you know, you have exchange rate volatility and compliance requirements that brings a huge cost to the system. The second is the longer settlement time. As you know, there are various checks and controls to eliminate money laundering and fraud. That again brings transaction settlement time a bit longer as compared to the normal period. The third, I feel, is the cumbersome process, because foreign exchange settlements and involvements of different institutions make cross-border transaction a bit arduous and complex at times. So, and the last, I would say, that is a main challenge, is the cross-border payments are regulated by different national institutions, which lack standardization, and you are working with different jurisdictions. So I think, in my opinion, the solution is you need to have financial inclusion for all the stakeholders to bring down the cost. This process is going to facilitate the developing of central bank digital currency, which is the hot thing. And central banks can provide the trust and reliability to the system. And of course, the governments will encourage the system to flourish, because it's going to bring more transparency and more standardization for all stakeholders.
Shan, you may have mentioned about governments encouraging cross-border settlements. What's happening in the digital disruption in Asia, and how do you think the Asian region could lead the way by adopting cross-border transactions?
Ibrahim, at the moment, Asia leads the adoption of cross-border payments. If you see at the start of the year, the central banks of Malaysia, Indonesia and Thailand, they linked their cross-border quick response payment system this year, which is quite significant because it gives all the central banks an advantage. The second is happening with Singapore and Malaysia by the end of the year. As you know, Malaysia's Do It Now will be linked with Singapore's Pay Now, which is again a good development for Malaysia and Singapore. The third that is happening in Asia is India's United Payment Interface will be linked with Singapore's Pay Now. So overall, I see more and more Singapore, Philippines, Thailand, Malaysia, Vietnam, all these regional players and central banks will come forward to have linkages. And thus, I foresee cross-border payment, the transaction volume will be between $800 billion to $1 trillion by 2026, by 2027.
Hello, Sean.
Hello, yes.
All right, Sean, we have supply-side disruption during COVID and post-pandemic, right? And according to the Harvard Business Review and as per CMO survey, only 8% of firms rate the use of blockchain in marketing as moderately or very important. So before becoming overwhelmed, keep in mind they don't have to build blockchain, but you do have to understand its potential. So how do you think blockchain technology is going to resolve this issue?
At the moment, I think many companies are adopting data analytics and AI to make a personalized product to the customer service. And as you rightly said, blockchain is the next evolution in this competitive practice. If you see, Walmart is already asking suppliers to start incorporating blockchain so that the hiccups that we have witnessed post-COVID situation does not happen. So I see more and more companies globally would be adopting blockchain, and this would become quite significant for major players to have a blockchain in the system in order to have smooth flow of supply chain without going into bottlenecks and hiccups.
Shan, DeFi is also a big item to be discussed. How do you think DeFi is going to play into this picture?
Centralized, decentralized finance is becoming quite hot and everybody is using it. But in my opinion, it's quite illusory at the moment, at the present time, because DeFi is based on three principles. Number one is the decentralized architecture, whereby you have digital ledgers maintained on multiple computers with online transaction. The number two is decentralized trust. Again, the validation of transaction is built upon the trusted intermediaries. And finally, the most important and most crucial is the decentralized governance, which is underpinned by the collective interest in maintaining the system integrity and security. But I would say that decentralized finance can move forward, but it needs to have the buy-in of all stakeholders. And ultimately, the overall collateralized financial instrument, they need to be shaped in a manner so that everybody can benefit. So decentralized finance could be a vogue thing, but it will take over a period of time, maybe 3 to 5 years, to become norm and become part of the mainstream financial markets.
Thank you very much. That was Shan Syed, Chief Economist of IQI. We'll be right back after these messages.
The claimed visit by U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi to China's Taiwan region only serves her personal political gains, and the Chinese military will not sit idly if her visit materializes, said a researcher with the China Institute of International Studies. Researcher Tang Jianchun shared his views on Pelosi's planned trip in an interview with China Global Television Network CGTN via video link on Sunday. He stressed that if Speaker Pelosi visits Taiwan, it would seriously violate the One China principle and the stipulations in the three China-US joint communiques. China will take strong countermeasure if Speaker Pelosi visits the Taiwan region, said Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Lijian on Friday. If the US challenges the bottom line of China, it will resolutely activate countermeasures, and all the consequences arising from there will have to be fully borne by the US side, he said.
The potential visit to Taiwan by the U.S. Speaker actually is a dangerous arrangement at this moment. It's only for the sake of the Speaker herself. If we look at her professional career decades, she just has manipulated repeatedly the sensitive issues for the mobilization of support for herself, including voters for the coming midterm and election. So this is actually a political game played by the Speaker for her own self, and I don't think it's good for the peaceful and stable relationship between the two countries.
Still in China, Chinese enterprises saw a continued drop in the cost of raw materials in July despite the dip in the PMI, or Purchasing Managers Index, for China's manufacturing sector in the month. According to the data from the National Bureau of Statistics, or NBS, released on Sunday yesterday, the PMI for China's manufacturing sector came in at 49 in July, down from 50.2 in June, which indicated a declining market demand and a slowdown in the production and operation activities of enterprises. In July, the Purchasing Price Index of raw materials dropped sharply by 11.6 percentage points from the previous month to 40.4%. declining for 4 consecutive months. Viewing from an enterprise survey, the proportion of enterprises reflecting high raw material costs also decreased by 7.9 percentage points from the previous month. This is a decline of 4 consecutive months. Meanwhile, as the domestic industrial and supply chains maintain smooth operation, logistics costs also declined. The proportion of companies reporting high logistics costs in July fell by 5.1 percentage points from the previous month, declining for 3 consecutive months. Although there were certain short-term factors affecting the current economic recovery, there are still foundations and conditions for the economy to maintain stability and rebound in the second half of this year. The main problem facing the current economic recovery is the lack of market demand. The recent meeting held by the Political Bureau of the Communist Party of China's Central Committee, or the CCC, has clearly stated that it is necessary to actively expand the demand.
First green ship could leave Ukraine on Monday, Turkish presidential spokesperson says. The possibility of the first grain exporting ship leaving Ukraine's port on Monday is high, and spokesperson for President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said on Sunday. Speaking in an interview, Ibrahim Kalin said the Joint Coordination Centre in Istanbul will probably complete the final work on the exporting routes very soon. Russia and Ukraine are major global wheat suppliers, and the unbrokered agreement they signed in Istanbul last week is intended both to ease the food crisis and reduce global grains prices that have risen since the Russian invasion. The agreement aims to allow safe passage for grain shipments in and out of Kromorsk, Odessa, and the port of Pivdenny. Moscow blames Ukraine for stalling shipments by the mining the port waters.
Meanwhile, heavy Russian strikes hit the southern Ukrainian port city of Mykolaiv early on Sunday, killing the owner of one of the country's largest grain exporters. While Russia said a Ukrainian drone struck its Black Sea Fleet headquarters in Sevastopol. Oleski Vedaturski, founder and owner of agriculture company Nibulon, and his wife were killed in their home, Mykolaiv Governor Vitaly Kim said on Telegram. Headquartered in Mykolaiv, a strategically important city that borders the mostly Russia-occupied Kherson region, Nibulon specializes in the production and export of wheat, barley and corn and has its own fleet and shipyard. President Vladimir Zelensky described Vedaturski's death as a great loss for all Ukrainians, saying that the businessman has been building a modern grain market involving a network of transshipment terminals and elevators. These people were also wounded in the attacks, and the city's mayor told Ukrainian television, adding 12 missile hit homes and educational facilities. He earlier described the strikes as probably the most powerful on the city of the entire five-month-old war. Up to 50 Grad rockets hit residential areas in the southern city of Nikopol on Sunday morning, and one person has been reported to be wounded.
President Joe Biden has tested positive for COVID-19 again, slightly more than 3 days after he was cleared to exit coronavirus isolation. Medical authorities say such rebound infections following treatment with an antiviral drug are rare. White House physician Dr. Kevin O'Connor reports that Biden isn't showing symptoms and feels well. In accordance with Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines, Biden will re-enter isolation for at least 5 days. He will isolate at the White House until he tests negative. The agency says most rebound cases remain mild and that severe disease during that period has not been reported. The president then followed up by tweeting out a 12-second video of him on a White House balcony with his dog, Commander. Word of Biden's positive test came. He had been negative Friday morning, just 2 hours after the White House announced a presidential visit to Michigan this coming Tuesday to highlight the passage of a bill to promote domestic high-tech manufacturing. Biden was treated with the antiviral drug Pavlovic after her first tested positive on July 21st. He tested negative for the virus on this past Tuesday and Wednesday. He was then cleared to leave the isolation while wearing a mask indoors. His positive test puts him among the minority of those prescribed the drug to experience a rebound case of the virus.
Meanwhile, Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez on Sunday offered North Macedonia his country's full support for integration into the 27-nation European Union. Prime Minister Sanchez held talks with North Macedonian Prime Minister Dimitar Kovacevski ahead of the last stop on his Western Balkan tour, visiting Albania on Monday. EU officials have recently sought to encourage governments in the region to move on with reforms amid concerns over Russia's efforts to boost its influence in the Balkans. Sanchez said that the war in Ukraine has prompted the EU to rethink its enlargement policies and open its doors to countries in Eastern Europe and the Western Balkans. The EU started membership negotiations with Albania and North Macedonia 2 weeks ago, a long-delayed step in the Balkan nations' path towards EU membership that gained momentum amid the war in Ukraine. The decision came after North Macedonia's parliament approved an agreement, overcoming Bulgaria's objections and cleared the way for the negotiations to start. Bulgaria had held up the progress on North Macedonia's accession talks, accusing that the government is disrespecting shared cultural, linguistics and historical ties. Despite the delay, the Western Balkan nations have maintained their ambition to become part of the world's most important trading bloc. Disputes with the EU members, Greece and then Bulgaria, prevented the country's bid from moving forward because any move by the EU to add new members requires unanimous agreement. Nabila, do you know about the dawn raid of Tan Sri Khalid? Reading it? Yeah. We need to read more about that because that is a true loss of corporate Malaysia. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's all that we have for this particular morning of Monday, 1st August. Before we end, just a quick note. Bursa Malaysia is trading at 1493, perhaps even reaching 15,000 later in the day. Who knows? My name is Ibrahim Sani.
And I'm Nabila Kanida. Thank you so much for watching.